Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, all this week on WBUR, we're looking at the growth of the state's biotech industry and its impact, both positive and perhaps not so positive, on Massachusetts. It's all part of WBUR's Bio Boom series. Now, state government has made major investments in the life sciences. Back in 2008, Governor Deval Patrick signed a 10-year, $1 billion initiative to bolster the life sciences industry in Massachusetts. A decade later, the state legislature is expected to pass a measure that would invest another $500 million in life sciences over the next 5 years and increase the tax credit to biotech companies for research and development that takes place here in Massachusetts. Now, the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center oversees this funding. It's a quasi-public investment agency dedicated to supporting life sciences in the Commonwealth. We caught up with Travis McCready recently. He's the president and CEO of the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center, and we asked him for his take on the state's bio boom.
The boom is decades in the making, and it now seems to be taking on an absolutely frenetic pace as a result of a number of different economic advances, scientific advances, cultural advances, demographic shifts. It all seems to be coming together in favor of us being now recognized as the world leader in the life sciences. And that includes biotech, but it also includes med device, diagnostics, digital health. All of these areas are sort of collapsing in on each other, and they all seem to be areas of strength for us in the Commonwealth. So this boom is real, not just as an economic boom, but as a scientific boom. It's very real.
Is it sustainable?
Well, it's sustainable from the standpoint of we have strength in these subsectors. It's an economic endeavor, so yeah, it will be subject to exogenous economic forces, federal law changes, investment capital availability, but it seems to be a space where we will be consistently strong for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Folks in the sector, the life sciences sector broadly, talk about, you know, the ecosystem.
Yes.
That it takes to really nurture and grow life sciences, and that because Massachusetts has done a great job in tending to that ecosystem.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why we're in the midst of this boom, right?
Right.
So there's, you know, there's the supporting R&D, there's the world-class educational institutions, there's, you know, arguably the state could be doing more in sort of building a pipeline from even the lower grades to, you know, educating the workforce
precisely
of the future. Now, there's also the issue of direct investment.
Yes.
That the Commonwealth has made, right?
Yes.
Because, well, it was a decade ago, exactly.
That's right.
Where under Governor Deval Patrick, the state embarked on a $1 billion life sciences initiative.
That's right.
Regarding that part of the puzzle specifically, how would you describe, has it been successful or not, that investment?
This 10-year initiative was designed to accomplish a couple of things that simply would not have taken place with just private sector or not-for-profit investment. One is it's this infrastructure, this notion that in order to be engaged in scientific endeavors, in order to spread this ecosystem out beyond Cambridge and Boston, scientists need to have access to the stuff.
The lab space.
The lab space.
The
incubators, the equipment. All of those tangible things that, you know, the private sector isn't great at investing in for shared use. And our initiative has been unapologetic and very clear that we're investing in that those infrastructure across the entire state. The second part has been our focus on workforce and workforce development. We run the single largest life sciences internship program in the United States of America. That's not something, again, which would have been made possible just with private sector investment. And it's fueling this cycle of college students and high school students getting into the industry, gaining full-time employment, and then going on and becoming scientists in their own right.
Governor Patrick, when he announced the initiative back in 2008, said it was going to create 250,000 jobs.
Yes.
How many has it created?
Well, I mean, I can guarantee you this, it hasn't been 250,000. But if you take a look at the combination of the jobs that were created as a result of the capital investments, which are about 2,000, the jobs that have been created by the tax incentive program, about 9,500 plus and growing, the internships that we've created, another 3,600 over the past 10 years, the capital investment that's come in sort of following the investments we've made in early stage startup companies. There's been about $3 billion total of follow-on investment and an untold number of jobs that are attached to those $3 billion. I think that while we haven't created 250,000 jobs directly as a result of our work, what we have done is we've created an ecosystem and supported an ecosystem that's gone on to support primary, secondary, and tertiary job growth, not just in the sciences, but also in legal, accounting, PR, construction, and all the other jobs that we just don't have any way of counting and tracking.
Okay. To be a pain about this, though.
Yeah.
I mean, when Governor Patrick said 250,000 jobs, that was an eye-opening, you know, admirable number to aim for.
Absolutely.
The numbers that you just put in front of us don't even amount to 10% of that. Folks, for example, at the Pioneer Institute a couple of years ago, they put out a report that basically said that the Commonwealth hasn't gotten value for its money out of this $1 billion when it comes to those direct jobs.
There are a couple of ways you can think about value for money and ROI. The first, obviously, is the direct number of jobs that are created as a result of our investments, certainly. But then, this is the life sciences, remember. What's important to also note is the direct investments that come into the Commonwealth and that are going into these companies and are coming into the academic medical centers as a result of our investment.
Yeah.
And if you take a look at that, the Commonwealth has received three times as much that has come in. So I think that's pretty good value for money. So you have to look at the bigger picture and sort of the network level effects that are taking place as a result of investment.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder why elected officials constantly and primarily talk about the direct job growth numbers that are possible out of these investments. I mean, because that is the promise by which they're selling to the voters that this is the best use for this billion or half a billion dollars versus $1 billion to, you know, school districts across the Commonwealth.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally do. And it's, I understand why we do that in economic development across industries, not just the life sciences. But I think the cool thing about this investment and what we've done with the taxpayer dollar is we focused on direct employment. We focused on improving the K-12 public school system. We focused on capital infrastructure investments that will stand the test of time and produce economic results. We focused on regionalization. I would rather, you know, focus on maybe having 100,000 jobs, but have those jobs dispersed across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mm. I think that's qualitatively just as important as the quantitative number. I would rather accept as a community a lower number of jobs, knowing that we're addressing issues of inequity, getting economically challenged neighborhoods and cities into the life sciences, rather than just, you know, a massive number of jobs that's focused on wealthier communities and wealthier neighborhoods that wouldn't have been able to participate anyway.
Mm. A lot of the focus is on Kendall Square because it's virtually unrecognizable from what it was 5 or 10 years ago. But I mean, be honest with me. Do you think the state has done enough? Has it done a good enough job to be sure that Springfield, Holyoke, Worcester, you know, pick your city or town name has had access to the funds and the support from the state to also, you know, have a boomlets where they are?
Kendall Square is going to be fine. What we needed to do was to create the same conditions for success in Brockton, Lowell, New Bedford, Springfield, Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires, Central Mass around Worcester, Metro West. And that has meant a combination of treatments, if you will. Infrastructure, whether it's co-working spaces, wastewater treatment facilities, education, ensuring that we've invested in every single vocational technical school in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, investing in the community colleges. We've invested in every single community college in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That is spread out the access to our funds and the capabilities that come with that access across to all four corners of the Commonwealth. Mm.
There is a proposal for $500 million more.
Yes.
To sort of keep the momentum going here. So another $500 million from the state of Massachusetts. You'd be in charge of handing a lot of that money out. Are you saying that, like structurally, you're going to be looking to invest, sort of in places outside of the greater Boston area?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We already have. Yeah. There are great assets that exist and great communities that exist outside of the greater Boston area that each have a capability to play in this ecosystem in a different way. That's how we're thinking about Massachusetts. We're thinking about it as a platform of connected cities and towns that each have capabilities, assets, and the capacity to be able to layer into the life sciences ecosystem in a unique and helpful way.
Yeah. Globally, biotech is expected to reach more than $700 billion by 2025. Okay, so it's vast numbers we're talking about here. That's globally, granted. But the point is that it's growing and there's a lot of money in it already.
Yes.
So why does the state need to invest another $500 million?
If you take a look back at the moment in which our organization was created and the $1 billion was authorized 10 years ago, there were 11 states that had life sciences dedicated funds. Obviously, it was Massachusetts, California. We were at the top of the heap. Fast forward to today, there are 44 states with life sciences-focused investment funds, and there are states that are eclipsing us in terms of the growth of the sector that never were even on the map 10 years ago. Utah, Texas. These states have the highest percentage compound annual growth rate in the life sciences of any of the 50 states. So while Massachusetts and California are still number one, the remaining 48 are eroding our market share. So we have to continue to invest to remain competitive.
I was seeing some numbers that in terms of venture capital investment,
yes,
not from the state, but investment going into the sector.
Yeah.
That in 2017, California captured some $6.5 billion.
Yes.
Massachusetts, some roughly $3 billion in VC funding.
Yes.
But that California, one state, that means more than half.
Yes.
More than 50% of the venture funding for life sciences went to one state.
Yes.
Whereas the other 49 states were fighting over the other half.
Your point is well made, but it also the underlying data would suggest that there's something afoot that's happening in these other 49 states.
Yeah. Indiana, for example, their R&D tax credit is up to 15%.
Yes.
Massachusetts is at about 10%.
Yes.
For direct investments in R&D. Should we be increasing the tax credit?
Yes, that's part of the tools. That's one of the tools that we need to be able to play with. And frankly, we're committed out in terms of what we've been able to accomplish in prior years. And in order to continue to be able to attract the companies that we've been successful attracting and helping the companies grow that have been here and scale that we've been successful scaling, we've run out of ceiling with our tax credit programs.
At what point in time does the bio boom here in Massachusetts and the momentum that it has run headlong into other challenges and realities we have here? Housing, transportation, cost of living. You want to keep people here to work in these industries, but if they can't afford it, even at pretty good paying jobs, what good is it going to do?
We've already run into significant structural community issues that plague every industry. Affordable housing, being able to get people between their place of work, their home, and schools.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, when MassBio conducted their industry snapshot last year, for the first time, what popped up on the radar, people expressed a willingness to choose where to live and choose perhaps not to live in the Commonwealth based on their commute time. That had not shown up before. So transportation, housing, these things are not sort of nice to have, exogenous issues that, you know, don't affect the innovation economy. They're real for the innovation economy. I have no control over them, but it's certainly something that we in the industry pay quite a bit of attention to.
Maybe you can talk to Governor Baker about it.
Well, he is, look, he understands it, he gets it, but I think that we as a community need to come up with a better solution for us all.
Well, that's Travis McCready, President and CEO of the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center. Tomorrow in WBUR's week-long BioBoom series, we'll take a look at the history and evolution of Kendall Square. We'll be talking to Philip Sharp, the Nobel Prize-winning MIT professor, co-founded Biogen in 1978. 5 years later, he moved it to Binney Street in Cambridge, and in the words of MIT's Tech Review, the biotech industry was born, and Kendall Square would never be the same. That's tomorrow. Thanks for spending the hour with us today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.